Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Ah. The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
The following podcast is a Dear Media production.
Are you going on date after date and still not finding the one or getting a text back? Well, you're probably doing something wrong. And I am here to tell you exactly what that is. I'm Lindsay Metzler, and I host We Met at Acme. It's a dating podcast that gives you all the rules and guidelines that you need to date successfully. Hey, it worked for me, and now I'm married. So you really should give it a listen if you haven't already. And you can also hear the horrors of dating. Everything that you want to hear is in We Met at Acme, so check it out.
Friends, and welcome to the Papaya Podcast. I'm your hostess, trying her mostest, Sarah Nicole, and each week I'm going to be dishing out some sweetness mixed in with some seeds of wisdom or something like that. So get ready to get inspired, get candid, get real, because we are all in this digital space together. All right, Dr. Nita, thank you so much for coming on today. I think that your book is dropping at a very ideal time when everyone's sort of looking and reflecting upon the year and they're looking on how to improve themselves. And you are sort of coming in with a book on how do we prepare ourselves, which I think is a really cool approach to life and everything with your new book, That Sucked, Now What? Tell me a little bit about how you've come into this type of work of like helping people get through messy parts of life. I'm guessing there's some lived experience.
There's a lot of lived experience, Sarah. And yes, I have been called the queen of reinvention, the queen of grit, the queen of resilience. And I think now I am claiming, you know, the queen of life mastery. I've definitely lived through some really big sucky moments. I mean, from losses, extensive loss in my early adolescence, and we can kind of dive into that, into, you know, losing and grieving the what I kind of thought was in the past, but a failed marriage, seeing both of my parents go through their cancer journeys and not make it out, losing a brother to sudden death. And by the way, this was all before I was 19 years old.
What?
Yeah. So,
Wow.
And then, yeah, so definitely a lot of chaos, a lot of turmoil, a lot of, you know, uncertainty, because as a teenager and a young person, when you're losing pretty much three members of your family and you go through this phase where you don't know if somebody's going to survive another day, that literally was a reality for myself for, you know, quite a few years as a teenager.
Yeah.
And so, you know, totally bypassed the teenage years from pretty much 10 when my mom got diagnosed, all the way into 19, those 9 years, I would see a ton of hardship. I would also see glimpses of joy that I could probably take, but it was a very, very thick cloud of, you know, survival and in a dysregulated nervous system and just constant, like, you know, a bear was chasing me. Of course, I did not have the languaging. I did not have the words because now it's informed so much of the work that I do. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that really stuck with me, having grown up in an immigrant household, my parents, for context, we grew up in Chicago, but for context, they were from, you know, my dad was from India, my mom was from the Philippines. Mm-hmm. And so I grew up mixed culturally, biracially, you know, multiple religions in the house. My dad had a very Hindu practice mm-hmm. and he was very spiritual. My mom was hardcore Catholic. And so we did all of the things.
Oh, that's such a mix.
Such a mix. And I think that, you know, having such a stronghold of whatever you want to call it, dogma, spiritual practice, community. And I do talk a lot in the book around how to create community and what I call your soul support posse, your SSP, in whatever ways it looks like. Because for me, at 16, seeing my mom die, then a year later, seeing my brother die, just out of the blue. And then 2 years later, my father was, I mean, it took us for a huge, tremendous loop.
Yeah. Talk to me a little bit about, so you go through so much before the age of 19, which I think even just down to the foundations of, let's say, womanhood, I notice this a lot. People always talk about it at the end of pregnancy where you're like in that nesting mode. And I'm like, I've gone through so many moments of change in life, similar to you. I've gone through divorce and whatnot, but maybe not have dealt with loss the same way. But there's this part of womanhood, especially, that really desires nesting, consistency, somewhere to go, community. We have so many pillars to ourselves. And for you to have gone through that much loss, how did that impact sort of your 20s and then entering into marriage? And did you find that you were sort of, you said it felt like sort of like a bear is chasing you, but how did you end up sort of regulating and finding a way to feel that nested in chaos?
Oh, such a, it's one of the reasons why I wrote the book That Suck Now What, because it would be many iterations before I would even get to that place, because I think many times, you know, we need to go through a breaking point. And for me, entering my 20s, it was literally this chase that I was still running, and this idea that no one in the world's going to feel bad for me and my little brother. I had a little brother as well, who was 5 years younger than me, and I was also his caretaker. And so it was just going through, I imagine, this like big tunnel. Mm-hmm. And you know, that there's like that sliver at the end of the tunnel, and I was chasing that. Mm-hmm. And whatever that meant, it was in my mind, because I was raised by tiger parents, it was success, it was accolades, it was making them feel proud, you know, making the ghosts of their past feel proud and their legacy live on in whatever it looked like. So for me, I was chasing that dream of, you know, doctor, dentist, lawyer, engineer, because that was ingrained with me from a very young age. Mm-hmm. So I needed to have that breaking point. And, you know, this happened kind of in my late 20s. I was 29. And I remember in my mind just thinking, wow, like, you know, everyone's proud of me. I'm doing all of this. I have this amazing practice. I fell in love in dental school and I am doing it. Like, this is great. This is that light at the end of the tunnel. But I felt so much like a fraud and an imposter. And that was my initial breaking point because all of that, the weight of those emotions and the weight of that chaos that I was holding in, because as women, you know, we do tend to hold a lot, especially as moms. And for me, this was almost so needed to heal the little child in me that didn't get to grow up, that didn't get to express, that didn't get to rage and anger when the doctors were saying, well, they only have, you know, 10 months to live, you know? And so there was a lot of that, that I was just holding on in this perfection of this profession, which was cosmetic dentistry for me, where it came crashing down. And it came crashing down in all of the ways. I realized that I was in a very toxic and abusive relationship. Mm-hmm. And that's when I decided to exit that. Mm-hmm. And a few years later, it would then inform everything that I did, because I fully had to break down. And I mean, like dry heaving, uncontrollably crying, you know, in the middle of the day, at night, in the morning. But think a decade of repressed emotions that couldn't go anywhere anymore. And, you know, I think society, it has these memes, because, you know, in motherhood, it's like, oh yeah, that crazy mom again, that's losing her, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. herself on her kids, but because we haven't really given an outlet for ourselves to release, where then we're labeled all of these things because we're supposed to be emotionally perfect. And I dive into that concept so much in the book, because that was me. My coping mechanism was toxic positivity. Like, I'm like, what do you mean you're sad? Come on, look at what I've been through, and I've been on the other side. But that was me masking. Mm. And honestly, it was such a good coping mechanism, because I don't know. I mean, there's all sorts of coping mechanisms, right?
Oh, yeah.
You know, the addictions, the sex, the drugs, the alcohol, all of those. So, you know, and each one has its place, of course, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think for me, that was such a stronghold. However, it would affect me then. It would catch up in all of the ways a decade later. And then to your point, then using my 30s as this profound time for healing, and this profound time of witnessing, allowing people to see me break down, allowing people that I hired in my dental practice to just see that I am not this perfect person that I was trying to be. I had no idea who I even was. I didn't even know what my favorite color was, because for so long, you know, I'm thinking like, I need to put myself last in order to make everybody else happy. Mm-hmm. That was the programming that I learned at 14 years old when my mom was first ushered into the ICU. I'm like, all right, I'm going to make everyone happy. It's going to be great. Yeah. Yeah. You know, in this performative way, because I grew up dancing, and I thought, okay, this would alleviate that because it's part of the culture, right?
Yeah.
But then fast forward in my 30s, where I could no longer, in my late 20s, where everything just went bust, that was when I started to pick up the pieces. That was when I started to fully dive in and date myself and fully allow myself to grieve and, you know, take the support of all different modalities. I mean, I went fully in, from, you know, energy work to somatic healing to traditional thought talk therapy to EMDR to, you know, dance therapy to traditional ashrams. I mean, like all of it and more. And I was just like in that yes phase of like, okay, I need this for me, because at that point I didn't know if I wanted to have kids. I didn't know, because I did so much mothering in my earlier years.
Yeah, and raising your younger sibling and raising yourself in many ways, right?
Oh, absolutely. That I'm like, no, I don't want that. I don't want that until finally, you know, it was, I remember it was like my 34th year of life, my birthday. And, you know, I said a prayer, and every year I would honor my parents and my brother. It was a very kind of like spiritual practice. And I would do this every year. And I said, you know, I think I'm ready for a relationship. And because in those years, I was so afraid to say yes to love, but I was not afraid to say yes to adventures that took me all around the world of 45 different countries. But there was still one aspect of that thread, which was male relationships and a love life, that I was like, I just don't know. Mm. And so that's when I started to go down that path. And then I started to say, you know what, if I see the friendships that I have, and if I take a look at the friendships that I have, male and female, but mostly the male ones, I'm like, how does that person treat me? Mm. And if I want to deepen even a male relationship, just as a friendship, just to see what that looks like, And then maybe a romantic relationship. A, what are the differences? B, why am I friend zoning everybody?
Yeah.
Because I totally was. I'm like, yeah, oh, we're cool. We could hang out. And
I was going to say, do these guys know you were friends?
Yeah, they probably didn't. There was a time, Sarah, where I actually took through this healing process because I was very much meta in my head.
Yeah.
And I did a whole, like, do anybody listening to this, don't do this. If you're going through a divorce, don't do what I did, but I did a whole spreadsheet and I would rate them, the matchmaker stuff on TV, but I would rate them from like a scale of like 0 to 10. 10 would be, you know, like in these different categories. So confidence, spirituality, what books they've read, where have they traveled? Are they cultured? I mean, just, you know, all of these things. And I know most women are like, all right, how do they look? What do they wear? How do they dress? How do they smell? Et cetera, et cetera. For me, it was like very much, how are they in tuned? Mm-hmm. And I would rate everybody like they were 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, but I was just not connecting emotionally because that part of my heart was still
very closed.
So until I was able to say, okay, in this next relationship, whoever this person is, I need to be vulnerable, because I would get vulnerable. Like everyone would get let in, but not fully, because I'm an extrovert.
Yeah.
And there was a tear. They wouldn't get to my like heart, but they would think that they were, and I would just have it stop. So I needed to reframe those questions and say, okay, if I want somebody vulnerable, I need to be vulnerable. If I want somebody brave and honest, I need to be brave and honest. And many times I needed to go first in that. And that was such a big game changer. And literally after I did that and was sitting in that soup, 3 months later, I would meet and get reconnected to my now soulmate partner, my baby daddy, co-pilot of two amazing kids. And so not shortly long after that, we had this incredible, beautiful 9 ceremony union all in different parts of the world, because we were in different parts of the world and we were just committing ourselves to, because he had been married before as I was. And I think there is that just recognition of we don't want what we've already been through to come into this container.
Yep.
And so we were so intentional about that. And of course, now entering motherhood, that was that. And I write this in the book in part 3, because the book is divided into 3 parts. But the third part of the book is how I teach you to fly forward past the sucky moments, past the times that really took you down. So if anybody is in that season right now, there's a whole 5-step process of flying forward. And so because I had so much tumultuous craziness in my life, when I entered motherhood, it was so different, because it wasn't the big T traumas anymore. It was the tiny T traumas of daily life. Like waking up 10 times in the middle of the night, second guessing yourself in your character as a mom, you know, losing your shit on your partner because they just forgot to, you know, put the bottles in the sterilizer, whatever the case is, right? We've all been there as moms. We've all done it. Yeah. But again, to see the contrast, what I'd lived through of these huge, big things, and then to say, oh, wow, these are small. I mean, building them up could definitely take you apart, right? But that became the practice of saying, okay, wow, no one's going to die and we're all going to be okay.
Yeah.
But I can actually nest and rest in myself, knowing that those years have really prepared me for this season of life where all right, there is chaos and there is messiness, and we're just going to, this is my meditation.
Yes.
Like, can I regulate myself internally without losing myself on everything? Because I had to do that so much naturally as a kid, not even knowing who was going to live or die the next day. I mean, that was literally a reality. And so it was just so different this time around. And that honestly gave me peace, Sarah. And it's why I literally wrote this book. This book literally came out of me as I was birthing my daughter. Oh, wow. We sold it to the publisher. I was still in the hospital. We gave birth. And my agent was like, yeah, here, these are the opportunities. And I'm like, I just gave birth to my second baby. And I'm like, all right. So my little daughter, Isla Rae, the moonlight halo, the bringer of knowledge and light, that's what Rae means. And she was ushering and helping me with this book because, you know, she's like 19 months now and
oh, wow.
The book is out. So she has been this gift, to reconcile the magical moments in the mess, to reconcile the joys in the chaos. And it's hasn't been easy at all. It was a different level of that.
Yeah. And, you know, I have to say, I really appreciate your approach to regulating and nesting and finding that internal balance, because I think a lot of times when I see messages of peace and balance or nesting online, they're so topical. Like they're so, creating less chaotic spaces and creating a better system and having better sleep and which are all valid things. However, what happens when you fall into these moments of life that naturally are chaotic, when you're going through change, when you have kids that just, guess what? They dump out everything all over your floor all the time. You have to figure out a way to sort of have that internal nesting core system that's running well in order to be able to, like you said, those little T moments and just the chaos that is motherhood, that is life, that is all of those things. I also had to laugh when you were saying about like creating that chart list and then recognizing how much you had to be that person, because I just was watching, it was Matthew Hussey, I think it was on Jay Shetty's podcast, and was saying, what is your best piece of dating advice ever? And he said, and hopefully I don't mince this, make a list of all the best attributes you want to see in your partner and then be that list. And that's like such a huge, I was just like, whoa, it was just like this little snippet I saw on Instagram. And I was like, man, that's incredible. Cause I think at every point in our life, we've always like, most of us have made some sort of a list. If you've gone through life change, I've gone through divorce, my husband's gone through divorce, you sort of, even if you haven't written it down, you've created a list. You now have a very, people always laugh at me because I married the opposite of my ex-husband. And I'm like, I didn't do that intentionally, but I definitely did it internally. There was something where I'm like, okay, that didn't work. So now we need to create a different list, a different system, a different type of partner. And now it is working. And I didn't mean for that all to happen, but I have to recognize that that's how it did. The other thing I wanted to sort of touch on is the fact that I so connect and appreciate that your breakdown moment was that on paper high in life, because I think that there is, I was driving the other day and I'm like, I wonder if sadness and disappointment are somehow interconnected in the same emotion, because mm-hmm. when we feel a lack of joy or a lack of happiness, it's so often connected to disappointment. And for me, I was at, I was married for over 10 years. I had 3 kids. I was finally, all those things that I thought, once I have this, I'll be happy. Once I have a house, we'll be good. Once I have, a marriage that is like stable and I've got these kids and all this stuff. And then it was like losing weight. So I lost all this weight. And I was like, why isn't it here? Why didn't it come for me? Why am I stuck in this mess? And then it all of a sudden was like the breakdown happened. And I hope that some people, I don't hope that some people relate to this, but I hope they understand that you might be revealed so much about yourself in the high points of everything you've ever chased. Because here I was at this high point of life, similar to you. And all of a sudden it was like all shown to me. Your marriage isn't working. Weight loss didn't make you happy. You have so much that you chased that wasn't it. And now you got to go all the way. You got to go all the way back and it's all in, because it's so much of life in saying yes to what looked good on paper, what other people may have celebrated for you, and then figuring out where you fit in that and trying to not do it for everybody else. There are huge moments in life that, like, divorce sucked. I'll say, like, that was my big, that sucked moment. And it's funny because you said at the very beginning, like the grief of going through divorce and like how, like, it hasn't really like left or like doesn't just like go away. And I'm like, it's so funny because people think you're just finalized by divorce. I got remarried and everything. And I'm like, I'm still dealing with it. And I feel like I don't have a space to go with that, because there's just, it's such a life event. My husband and I both can relate to it. So we talk about it a lot, in the fact that it is it was a bigger life event than getting married. Getting divorced is a bigger life event than getting married. And everyone's so quick to sort of be done with it. Like, you're okay, you got divorced. Like
you sign the papers and then you're like, all right, who's next? What's next?
Yeah. What's next? Right.
But then there is the grieving point, right? Yeah. There's the grieving point when you go from, you know, zero kids to one child as a mother, mm-hmm. and you're grieving, you know, the personal time that you had. There's a grieving point in all of these facets. And I even wanted to say when you were sharing kind of the moments in our breakdown, and I think that the breakdown, when we actually have it, and if somebody is in that breakdown now, I mean, I remember when I'm like, why am I here? This sucks. I don't want to feel this. I don't want to, like, this is so painful. Like,
and it's fraudulent feeling. You're like, crap. Like,
And I'm like, you know, and you're just like, can I just shop my misery away?
I know.
I just like date, you know, five other people? And, mm-hmm. and so it's like, we have these things because we want to numb the pain. Mm-hmm. It's too uncomfortable, but you know, here you and I are on the other side and we're like, actually, that is the biggest sign that a huge breakthrough is on the way. That's the biggest sign that
a breakdown means a breakthrough, really.
Really. And while that is like so cliche and everything, but it is the actual truest sense of the words, because and really allowing you to feel it's kind of like with our kids, right? Mm-hmm. When they break down, when they finally start, you know, crying after like, and having a big meltdown, you know, that they just needed to release all of those emotions because they were holding it up so hard.
Oh, yeah.
And then you're like, oh, 20 minutes later, it's gone. It's processed. They're going again, you know, if we allow them. And for us, when do we suppress ourselves because we're judging the way that we're acting? We're judging the way that we're thinking in our mind. I'm not supposed to be breaking mm-hmm. down right now. I'm mm-hmm. not supposed to be having a moment.
Yeah.
But if we could just
be good,
right? If we could just reframe that and say, oh, wow. All right, the universe is telling me, or God, whatever, someone is telling me that I need to pay attention to this mm-hmm. and like to thank that instead of judge that and to welcome it instead of suppress it, because that is our indication of like, hey, we got to slow down. Hey, all of the things that I worked so hard for in trying to gain my happiness in all of these ways, I'm going to be happy this time and when and where and how, but it never happens because we're so quick to chase it, mm-hmm. to pay attention into that, you know, and I just think that it was just so beautiful in the way you shared that.
Well, I think it's a lot like, I think about the three little pigs and like how they build these houses and they get knocked down or blown down. And finally they, you know, there's the one, I think of it as one pig and one wolf, and I'm the pig and I'm slow. I built a house, it gets blown down, built a house, gets blown down. And each time it's structurally a little bit better, right? So you can't possibly go through something that's a total breakdown and expect that the exact same thing's going to happen again, because how could it? You've learned so much. And I will say, for someone, I'm going to take my weight as a category because it's an easy one to reference. But when I was thin, people were so congratulatory to me and so happy for me. And, you know, what a great job. You look amazing. You must be so happy. And then facing the reality that I wasn't was really, really difficult. However, now when people sort of challenge me on like, you can't possibly be happy with what you look like, I'm like, it's not about that anymore. I have an internal thing going on and I'm like, have this. So when I get challenged on it, I'm not saying it's easy, but it's not as hard as it was when people assumed all my health and joy in a time that I was like truly struggling. So when you come face to face with the parts that didn't work out, when it does start to work out a little better, even when it looks different than the picture that you maybe thought you were painting, there's some sort of internal piece. You're like, yeah, but I already went there. I already went down that path. I already built that house. I know it didn't work out for me. So I'm okay mm-hmm. in this now new foundation, in this new place, because I trust it. It's a very different experience. And for anybody who's been through divorce will know, divorce and remarriage and remarriage is actually working out. Let's just say that. I will say it's fascinating how often we talk about marriage as if it's one singular experience.
Yeah.
Like as if having a job is like the exact same for everybody. I always have to remind people of that. I'm like, when we talk about marriage and marriage is hard or marriage is this or marriage is that, I'm like, who's marriage? Because it's two individual people and entirely different circumstances every single time. So I really love that you have sort of redefined this newer relationship and really looked at it in an entirely new lens, as it should be and as it is. And I'd love to hear a little bit more about, you know, as you talked about in your book, as you do talk about in your book, that sucked, now what? You talk about the framework and sort of preparing ourselves for things that suck, or maybe dealing with the things that suck through a framework that's going to leave us nearly unscathed. Not to say that we're not understanding of the impacts of grief or loss or change or anything. But what is, like, maybe give us an example of like, what does that look like? Like, how can we actually prepare ourselves for something sucky? Or is it more giving ourselves the tools that when something sucky happens, we really are a little bit more equipped to handle it?
Yeah. So one of the big frameworks that I actually love, and it's in part two of the book, and it's how to actually build resiliency. And you know, when I first started out on my speaking journey and I had actually sold my dental practice and I got asked to speak a lot, and of course people would get wind of my story and they're like, oh my gosh, you know, so I didn't necessarily realize it would shift and change into, then being an advisor for companies, going in to invest in female led companies. I had no idea that me and sharing my story would do that, because then I got so very curious about how leaders and everyday people just make decisions after sucky moments or after they had a fall. And so there's, you know, four pillars of what I like to call unshakable resiliency, and how to build it. And the first is we really have to make peace with our upbringing. And many times, you know, we can't obviously change that, but many times we're so quick to say, okay, I'm going to just keep going. And that thing happened in the past, but that doesn't mean that it's going to happen again. And it's almost like, you know, you're post-divorce, or maybe even imagine when you were dating and you would probably attract that same kind of person over and over and over again. And I know that even for me, you know, that my codependency, because of my wounding growing up of the fear of abandonment, had me select partners, maybe subconsciously, I didn't even know, but to validate my worth, because, you know, in my mind, I didn't know who I was. I didn't think I was worthy of love because, oh, hey, I lost three members of my family before I was 19. So these are the stories that are imprinted in our mind for whatever reason. And many times we're so quick to shove it under a rug, shove it under in a closet. We don't want to see that, but our signs are, hey, okay, there's another partner there, you know, and we're so quick to say, oh gosh, I only attract jerks, or gosh, another jerk again, like how?
Yeah.
But yeah, we got to point the mirror back here. Like, what are we seeing in ourselves that those types of people are very attractive to us, and we're attracted to their energy in that way. And most of the time we blame it outwardly, right?
Yeah.
But so much of it is stemmed from, okay, fine, maybe mommy issues, daddy issues, unresolved, you know, bullying issues growing up. And I have a whole process of how to reconcile some of the things that maybe we didn't even know growing up. Like who was, were you closer to one caregiver or another? Did you grow up in a household where you saw how your grandparents were treated with your parents? Or maybe you just grew up in a single parent household. Maybe you just grew up with one caretaker, and that informed who you could trust. That informed, did you have to just trust yourself? Did you have helicopter parents? Did you have tiger parents? Or were you just, you know, like a latchkey kid? You were just on your own and you had to build street cred. That would increase your bounce factor because you had to do things on your own, right?
Yeah.
Some people, they get into college, and I've spoken at these places where, you know, we know this, the moms will call in like, hey, you know, junior hasn't been able to do his work. Can you just have him take a test next week? Cause we're going on a family trip, you know? is that kid going to build that resiliency when he gets to college and mom and dad can't call in favors anymore, right? Yeah. So this is our upbringing, right? And so, and to see, who did we get along with? Did we have bullies? Did we have a big T trauma, like loss or divorce or sexual trauma or any of those things that would in really play a role in how we're actually relating to the outside world and how we pick partners and how we even pick bosses or even relate to our own kids. So yeah, that's the first part, right? Okay. So the second part of this is when we are actually knowing we are still kind of being safe in that bubble. So I love what you shared, Sarah, of you needed to look within you because mm-hmm. you were having all of the highs. You lost all of this weight. You had found a partner again. And I love what you said. Like, it wasn't at my low. It was at my high where I still wasn't like happy. Yeah. And you know, this is taking an assessment. So part two is just taking an assessment of your current environment. What does it actually look like? Who are you spending your time with? Are you spending your time with people that also gossip, that also are like, yeah, oh my God, my life is so miserable. I can't do anything. My kids suck. You know, all of the things suck. Or
including social media. Everyone needs to pay attention to that. That's where I really, yeah. Yeah.
And that's so subconscious because they do that to us. I've even, you know, felt that. I'm like, oh my gosh, like how does that mom have the time all of these things? And I'm and then you feel so terrible about yourself.
It's like whenever everyone makes those jokes, whenever Taylor Swift comes out with a new album and they're like all singing breakup music as if they're going through it, even though they're like in really happy relationships. Even when you're witnessing something online, you wear a part of what these other people are going through, right? There's a reason that when somebody brings up what's going on in their world, that we wear a part of that ourselves, right? So when you talk about assessing your current environment, please include social media folks, like just for anyone like listening, I noticed that for me hugely.
Right. And like, who are you consuming? What are you consuming? How often are you consuming them? Like there was a point where, you know, like there was a postpartum, you know, depression that I went through mm-hmm. with both kids. Mm. And I had to, and I talk about that in the book a lot. So, but I had to literally unfollow certain accounts because I'm like, nope, I don't even want to imprint this in my mind to then reinforce the fact of like mom guilt or perfectionism they're doing, you know, like it was just like, nope, like, stop. But that takes our own personal responsibility to say, mm-hmm. I am going to do this. I'm going to take this step that's uncomfortable and block other people, even though secretly you're kind of curious about what they're doing, but for your own mental sanity, because it is human nature. That's why these big guys have created these platforms for us to get addicted and stay. But then at what point at our expense of our mental health and the way we then react. So our current environment could look like even exposing ourselves to good stress and good stress could mean, you know, it could be in a physical sense. It could be getting literally dirty with your kids, letting them play in the dirt, letting messes happen. You know, I love that we were talking about that right before we got on, but just the idea that can you live a little in the chaos and not judge it, right? Mm. And not worry if other parents or families are coming over that you're just going to connect and you don't need to put on a full spread, right? That is allowing more positive and good stress in our lives and to lean into that uncomfortable phase of whatever that is, right? And then in stages or pillars 3 and 4 is your emotional capacity to feel, to allow, and to not judge if you are getting angry, to not judge yourself if you are. Like, I have to be the certain sense. Like, wouldn't you want your kids to know that you're human, that, hey, mommy's having a bad day and really big feelings right now? Like, this is what I've been telling my kids. And I'm like, it's okay to express. It's not okay to hit somebody when you are angry, but it's okay to say, I am feeling angry. You know, it is okay to, if you have to scream into a pillow right now, right? Mm-hmm. You want to scream out loud if you're feeling angry, well, take a pillow so we're not going to disrupt anyone, but have your moment, right? I think it's, we're so afraid of expressing certain emotions And we're so quick to dismiss it, but it's not what we like, how we, what we do with those emotions is what we should be worried about. Not the, that, not the act of expressing it. Right. And then the last part is really what you've been alluding to this whole time is your radical self-awareness, your awareness to take stock of, wow, that's not working for me. Like I did all of this and I'm still not happy. Like why? To see what is not in alignment with you and to then take action on that.
Yeah. Oh, I so appreciate what you said for pillar three though, because I remember years ago, there was an inspirational speaker, coach, influencer, and she made a quote about never letting your children see you break down or have moments. Like that's not their responsibility to witness that. Or I don't even remember what it said. I remember being so sad because I thought I held everything together for my kids for so long. And there was like certain points where I was like, literally sitting on the floor and crying and saying, mommy's just really sad. And I have nothing. I can't shield you from this anymore. I'm sad. And it's okay to be sad. And as like, we talk about relationships and like letting people in at that moment, I let my kids in, like truly let my kids in. And everything has changed since that moment. Like literally I've watched them reveal themselves or like over and over again, being like, something is, you know, not right. I'm sad and I can't explain it. I've got this going on. It, as we've sort of, there's this mentality around motherhood that we're like statues and we're all of these things. And
we're supposed to be stoic.
Stoic. Yeah. And it's so archaic, but there was a quote I came across recently that motherhood isn't defined on time spent, but the relationship built. And I needed that in a time that I was like having to work two jobs and I was emotionally so spent, but like when I was with them, it was so good. And now I look back on that time and I'm like, it had nothing to do with how much I was at home, especially after being a stay-at-home mom for 10 years, suddenly not having that access to them all the time or going through divorce and sharing custody and recognizing how much that emotional vulnerability and that relationship building was not on me serving them, but on us really connecting on a new level, especially as they begin to understand and regulate their own emotions. Now I have a freaking toddler. So it's like watching her go through it. Like we, it's funny, the one day she was like upset and I pouted because I was like, oh, you're sad. And then she saw me sad and then she lost it. I was like, oh, you already have like this empathy part of you that understands that like, we have this shared humanity. And I love that. I want that. I grew up with a mother who was, tried to guard so much of it, but was also so open and vulnerable of like mental health and like chronic illness. And that shaped who I am. That makes me who I am today. And I, that pillar three, when you said that, I'm like, please, yes. Like allow yourself those feelings, allow that vulnerability, even within the spaces of your home, like these safe spaces that you do build for yourself and others. And that radical self-awareness, I mean, it's hard. It, when we talk about, you know, when I was mentioning the social media and you were saying during a dark time, it was really hard for you to watch people who were like on really, like really doing well. I have had sort of like that. And then I've had the other side of it where I'm actually doing great and I'm following accounts that are almost like, I don't even know how to explain it. There was one, or she just touches on a lot of points of like difficulties in motherhood. And I wouldn't even be struggling with these things. And what her work is so valid. Like, I just want to give that, I'm not, obviously not saying her name, but like her work is so valid in what she's doing and like showing other people that they're not alone. However, it was causing me to create scenarios that weren't there. It was causing me to suddenly find negativity in my surroundings as if motherhood was eating me whole when it wasn't. I was actually doing really okay. That took a huge moment of self-awareness to be like, there's something in consuming this content that's changing who I am. And I don't like it. And I have to sort of like disengage. And that was like such a, it was such a proud moment for me because I'm such a people pleaser and I want to like support everybody, but I'm also like, I clearly see and need this boundary on a certain type of content, whether it be toxic positivity or whether it be, you know, pieces of people's lives or like they're sharing in vulnerability. That's like hitting into a spot that's creating something that I don't want to see in myself. And it's such a, it's such an amazing thing when you start to, as my therapist told me years ago, pay attention to your own thoughts and recognize them. We're in such a busy life and such a busy world and our thoughts come and go like they're nothing. We're in a podcast. So thankfully we have a record button going where we're talking out loud on our thoughts. But typically you would just go throughout your day and you would note the hard parts, you'd note the high points, but it's all the stuff in the middle, like all the things that are really sustaining you, that I find that in the awareness of those things have built up a lot of resiliency for myself. I think that what your work is doing, and obviously off a lot of lived experience, but acknowledgement that it's not just like the big stuff, it's like the little buildup of stuff too, that when it comes to sucky moments in life, whether they're high points, whether they're low points, whether it's just the buildup of everything in between, I think your book is going to do some amazing things for a lot of people. I know it's been years in the making for you. So this is so incredible that now it's going to be on the shelves on January 31st. What a moment.
Yes.
Tell everyone where they can find it and find you and search getting ready to be resilient for what life has come in for us.
Right. And to have fun in that resiliency,
Yes.
I think that's the big takeaway that I want people to have from this book, that it is chaotic, it's messy, yet can we also evoke a little sense of play in this and be able to like even laugh at ourselves if there's milk spilled on the floor, if you're like, all right, well, here, come to my, you know, shit show today.
Here's
where we're at.
Yes.
Right. And to not take it so personally for yourself. Mm-hmm. Right. And so I love this conversation so much. We have such great like banter. I totally want to bring you on the brave table, Sarah. I'm asking you in front of your audience.
I'm in.
Okay. Right. Great. Cause we do all things, you know, brave conversations. And yeah, the book is out on January 31st. So when you actually order, you come to thatsuckednowwhat.com. There's a really special gift for your audience. You'll also get a 44-page color handbook that goes specifically with the material inside of the book. And honestly, it's just, we all love these like workbooks and guidebooks, and it's just great because it's a little journal that I put together. Yeah. It's everything that I've wanted to accompany my self-healing. And I know that, you know, even within our community, people have loved it and they've loved iterations of this, but specifically around going deeper and wherever you are at. So you get that completely for free. And you also get my 5-day Fly Forward healing practice. So we start with visualizations, meditations, and they're 10-minute audios, but they're great because it also helps reinforce everything that you're learning in the book. So yes, I'm giving a bunch of things away, but it's only because I believe in this so much. We've partnered up with at least 20 different schools, teachers, because we also want young people to have a different sense of how to build resiliency in their own lives and organizations of domestic violence, as well as folks who grew up without parents, because that's a big part of my story. So I'm so excited for everyone to read this. I mean, this was inspired out of motherhood. So we're at the right place.
It's incredible. Well, thank you so much. Thanks for our banter today. It's been really meaningful for a Monday. Hopefully everyone listening is really taking, so I've taken so many notes. I hope you have as well. And I'm going to have everything in the show notes for you as well, where you can follow Dr. Nita and where you can grab the book, all of that great stuff. And we will see you next week. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for listening all the way through this episode. If you've made it this far, I have one more little thing to share with you. Did you know that I actually have a photo and video editing app? So many people were surprised to hear that I have one, but it's actually been around for a little while, and you can join over 200,000 of the Papaya community by downloading my free app, Pink Papaya, on iOS. While so many apps focus on changing your appearance, Pink Papaya is all about celebrating yourself for exactly who you are and expressing your creativity and your storytelling with nearly 50 free filters and tools. Find us on social and share your edits as well. We might just share them too. So tag me as well at Pink Papaya App. Just had to share that with you, especially as the springtime's coming. We've got some really cool things happening in there and so much more coming. Check it out at Pink Papaya App. Thanks so much for listening and have a great day.
Well, friends, thank you so much for tuning in and listening to today's episode. For more information on this episode, check out the show notes or find us on Instagram at The Papaya Podcast. And if you loved what you just listened to or know somebody who would, please share it. Simply screenshot today's episode in the podcast app and share it to your Instagram stories. And don't forget to tag us. Last but not least, if you'd like to lend your personal support to the podcast, take a moment and leave a review on iTunes. We would be oh so grateful. Tune in next week for a fresh new episode of the Papaya Podcast, and we'll see you then.
Please note that this episode may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products and services. Individuals on the show may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to in this episode.